TRE.
Talk Radio Europe. Life Stories. With Ian Rutter.
Today for Life Stories, my guest is Debbie Williams, founder of the campaigning group Brexpats Hear Our Voice. Debbie and her family live in Alcosebre in the province of Valencia on the Costa del Azahar. Debbie, thank you very much for being my guest on Life Stories.
You're very welcome, Ian. Thank you for having me.
Debbie, campaigning group. The campaigning group Brexpats Hear Our Voice. Obviously, time is running out before the 29th of March. So it seems apposite, really, to talk a little bit about what your organisation does. So what does Brexpats Hear Our Voice do? And who are you trying to be heard by?
Okay, so we campaign for the preservation of the rights of British nationals living in the EU, as well as supporting EU citizens living in the UK. So we face different and difficult issues, and we all feel that we're living in this prolonged state of limbo, which has been forced upon us by the result of the referendum, of course. We place high value on working together and supporting each other within the group and making contacts with other groups and working together. That's the premise, really, for the group. We also are against Brexit because we believe that the best way to preserve our rights is to stay a fully functioning member of the European Union.
Now, you're an organisation that gives voice to people who are, as you mentioned, living in other parts of Europe other than the United Kingdom and vice versa. So how do you represent them? I mean, how does this relationship between you and these individual voices work?
Well, it started the day after the referendum. In fact, I should go back. It started before the referendum, and I used my own Facebook profile to try and gauge opinion from amongst my own friends about what they thought about Brexit, and particularly what they thought about any particular problems citizens might have themselves, those living in the UK, those abroad, that sort of thing. And I did I ran a straw poll, and it was quite interesting, the results of that. So actually, before the referendum, if you were to go by my straw poll, you would know that there would be a Leave result. So the day after the referendum, I started a Facebook group, and it was actually called Brexpats Concerns. I mean, I'd never done anything like this before. And very soon we were up to about 250 members, because everybody was concerned about what was going to happen to them. And it's just grown from there. So we wrote a letter to all MPs, all MEPs, all the Lords. That was our very first action in the first week after the referendum. And then we got some traction from there within the House of Lords. And that's how we started making connections and reaching people initially. And yeah, it's grown from there.
Now, you mentioned there that your work started before the referendum, and the results of your straw poll showed that the Leave side was going to win. I mean, were you shocked at that result?
Absolutely. I think I must have been burying my head in the sand somewhere. And of course, I think living outside of Europe for only 12 years of my living outside of the UK for only 12 years of my 56 years. In the run up to the referendum, I was living and working outside of the UK, so I think I might have missed quite a lot of the information that was going around. So yes, it was a very, very big shock to me, and I didn't realise there was so much vehemence amongst my friends, not all, towards the European Union.
Now, obviously, subsequent to that, over the last 2 years, have you conducted other straw polls to try to test the mood and whether it's changing? Because obviously there are so many opinion polls going around. And have you noticed a swing or a perceptible shift?
Within my own group, my own friend group, I should say, not the actual Brexpats group, because that's a given. But within my own friendship circle, I have noticed a swing towards Remain, I have to say, certainly in the last 4 weeks.
Now, time is running out, and a huge amount has been happening in the UK Parliament of late. Do you feel that mood generally across the country is going to be enough to, I suppose, change the direction in which we're travelling, or do you think we are on an inevitable course?
No, I think we can change the direction we're travelling if that's what that's what's needed. And if I'm following all the events on Twitter and all the polls, for instance, Best for Britain run some very good sample polls on opinions about this, and there's definitely a swift shift to remain.
And how can you influence, and how can you continue to influence with so little time left?
We just have to keep plugging away, doing what we can, attending all the events that we can, writing letters. I mean, it's really key that everybody writes a letter. You know, it does make a difference, even if you don't get response. It's the volume of emails that MPs get. We've been told that.
Write letters to whom? I mean, if people are living in Spain, do they write directly to the MP of the last constituency in which they lived, or where do they write?
Yes, if you want to influence in the United Kingdom, then I would suggest that you do that. And if you've been out of the country 15 years or longer and you think you haven't got an MP, then I would just write to a cabinet minister.
Okay. Debbie, I ask all of my guests to choose six pieces of music that best represent periods in their life stories. Music that evokes a strong memory, perhaps, or marks a significant moment in their lives. What would be your first piece of music and why have you chosen this?
I've chosen Maria Callas, and the song's called O Mio Babbino Caro as my first song. Actually, for a very sad reason, it reminds me of my oldest, dearest childhood friend who passed away way too young. We didn't have the same choice in music except for this one song, and we both loved it. So although it's sad, it does remind me of happy times, and I absolutely love Maria Callas's voice.
Debbie Williams is my guest today, sharing her life story. Debbie, despite being officially semi-retired, founded the campaigning organisation Brexpats Hear Our Voice. Debbie lives in Alcosebre in the province of Valencia on the Costa del Azahar, and we're chatting via Skype. Debbie, now we mentioned a little bit about the work you do with Brexpats Hear Our Voice. Why did you feel so strongly to set up this organisation? And what have you achieved by doing so?
The main premise was to find out what would happen to the rights that we had exercised, the treaty rights that we had exercised as UK nationals living in the European Union. What would happen to them? Would they fall away? Would they stay? Because there was conflicting information, all sorts of things being said in the media and by various Leave campaigners, citing various conventions and treaties of the European Union, and it didn't ring true. So I needed to find out for myself actually what would happen. And as has happened, all the people that said, "Oh, you'll be fine," are completely wrong. So the rights do fall away in the event of no deal. That's for sure. There were some rights within the withdrawal agreement. And of course, not all, So freedom of movement for somebody like myself and my husband who needs freedom of movement to continue earning a living. Those were the main sort of concerns. And that's what motivated me. From a personal point of view, it affected myself, my husband, my child, some of my friends. And that was the main motivation to start the group. And of course, it's grown from there.
And obviously, since its inception, what have you achieved? I mean, do you personally feel reassured by the negotiations that affect non-Spanish people living in Spain?
No, I'm not at all happy with any of it. Not in the slightest. I feel that we have been discarded and ignored by the government. I think it's quite disgusting.
Disgusting in what way? I mean, how do you still feel vulnerable? Do you feel that your rights as someone who is residing in Spain have been radically diminished?
Well, nothing's happened yet. I mean, that's the first thing. But we're nearly 3 years down the line, aren't we? We're 2.5 years down the line, and we don't know anything. I mean, the withdrawal, the deal that the Prime Minister put forward was voted down, so we're still in a position of not knowing what's going to happen to us.
Mm-hmm. I mean, are you a resident in Spain? I mean, how have you safeguarded, or what sort of steps have you taken to safeguard your own position here? And what recommendations would you give to anybody else who's in a similar position?
Well, we only moved to Spain last May, and as soon as we got here, we registered at the town hall, and then we live here permanently. And during this, the time between May and now, we've actually got our residencia, so we've got our green card, and we're just looking at changing our driving licenses now, and we pay tax here, my husband's autónomo. So, you know, we've done everything I think that we possibly can. It's the driving license, that's the outstanding bit now. And I recommend that everybody checks that their situation is legal, that they're registered properly, especially as, you know, those that are living here permanently.
Yeah. Now, Debbie, you are very busy because you're also on the steering committee for another organisation, British in Europe. What does that organisation do and what's your role within the organisation there?
British in Europe is a coalition of 10 core member groups, and we also have a set up affiliated groups across the EU. British in Europe is like Brexpats, it's pan-European. The focus is advocacy and lobbying at a high level, so we've managed to have meetings with Michel Barnier and various government officials in the UK, but no senior minister. We haven't met the Prime Minister or any of the DEXU ministers, but we have met some senior ministers. So, you know, we've been very, very busy this last 2.5 years, you know, doing all that. I mean, it's just growing and growing and growing. And we're a volunteer organisation.
Yeah. And in June 2017, your efforts in some ways were recognised in that you and the work that you've been doing with Brexpats, Hear Our Voice, you were honoured with an award, the European Citizens Prize of 2017. Do you feel that has given you added momentum and that recognition is important for the work that you're doing?
Oh, this is a difficult one, isn't it? Prizes.
Prizes is always difficult.
Yeah. I mean, we'd rather not have Brexit and carry on living our lives as before. But yes, I mean, it would be silly to say that we weren't absolutely pleased by that. I mean, it was wonderful. We were nominated by Jean Lambert, a London Green MEP, and we did win. So yes, it was a wonderful recognition. And in fact, we're the only, I think we created history because we're the first group to win this award outside of their country of resident, outside of their country of origin.
Hmm. But it must be very good for raising the profile of the organisation and getting more support for what you're trying to do as well.
Well, yes, I mean, it does open some doors, you know, it definitely. And, it, you know, the award was for what we were very, very pleased for was it was awarded for promoting pan-European cooperation and sharing values, yeah, which, you know, which is very important to us, you know, as a group. We like to be supportive of each other. That's for sure.
Yeah. Time for your second piece of music, Debbie. What did you choose for your second piece of music and why this one?
I chose Bob Dylan and Johnny Cash, Girl from the North Country. I just think it's a wonderful piece of music. And both the singers were pioneers and campaigners. And, you know, they had a voice and they had a lot to say. And I just think it's a very moving song.
If you're traveling to the North Country Fair, where the winds hit heavy on the golden line, remember me to one who lives there, for she once was a true love of mine. See for me that her hair's hanging long, it curls and falls all down her breast. See for me that her hair's hanging long, that's the way I remember her best. If you go where the snowflakes fall, when the rivers freeze and summer ends, please see for me if she's wearing a coat so warm to keep her from the howling.
Talk Radio Europe. Online at tre.radio. Life Stories with Ian Rutter.
You're listening to Life Stories, and my guest is Debbie Williams, founder of the pro-EU campaigning group Brexpats Hear Our Voice, and a member of the steering committee of the organisation British in Europe. Now, obviously, the work that you're doing with these two campaigning organisations is keeping you really busy, Debbie. Yes. Have you always been a campaigner? What did you do before Brexpats came about?
I have never campaigned in my life. That's before this. Absolutely never been involved in politics or anything like that. My husband is a self-employed IT contractor, and we both run our limited company. And we've moved for contracts all over Europe. So before we moved to Spain, we lived in The Hague. Before The Hague, we were in Brussels. Before Brussels, we were in Maastricht. And before Maastricht, we were in Munich, well, just south of Munich, a place called Starnberg. So all that since 2012. So we've been quite busy.
So what brought you to Spain? Was it work here, or was it a desire to move somewhere specific?
It was actually a Brexit-related decision. My husband's contract in The Hague had come to an end. And previously, what we used to do when a contract came to an end, we'd go back to the UK for a new contract, see our friends and family, you know, check up on our house and things like that. But this time, we decided, because of the issues with freedom of movement, and we'd always wanted to move to Spain, that we'd bring those plans forward and base ourselves in Spain.
Yeah. So given that you've spent quite a lot of time working and living in Europe, and we're suddenly in this very strange political period, where do you feel an affinity? Do you feel European, or do you feel British? Do you still feel a draw to go back to the United Kingdom?
I've been asked this many times, and I have to say I feel Welsh, British and European in no particular order. I feel all those things very strongly. I feel a very, very big affinity with Wales, of course. I mean, I have family there and friends there. And of course, Surrey, where I used to live when I worked in England. And of course, with our European friends, they've, you know, had a wonderful time living in Europe. You know, it's been hard at times, you know, learning the languages and things. It's not always easy, but it's been a real, really, really good experience.
Yes, and obviously you also mentioned that you do have a child who's grown up with you in Europe, and your husband and your daughter are now fluent German speakers. Mm-hmm. Where do they sit? Do they are they similar to you in their sort of their feelings about nationality, or do they, particularly your daughter, does she feel more European than British?
Absolutely, spot on. Yeah, she does. My husband's very much like me. He's also Welsh, and we're pretty easygoing and fluid about, you know, where we're from and things like that. We have no problems with our identity there. For Molly, it's a little bit more difficult. She feels this this whole situation very much as a slap in the face, really. I mean, she feels very European. She also feels British, but she feels very European. And she's really, really upset by the whole thing, really.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you mentioned that you've only recently moved to Spain to live here. Has it been a fairly easy transition? And do you feel that this is now your home?
Absolutely. Yes, I think to put perspective on it, we've often holidayed in Spain, not in this area, actually, funnily enough, but we've often holidayed in Spain and did feel an affinity with, you know, towards Spain. So it's been, I would say, it's been actually miraculously easy, the whole thing, the whole registration thing, buying a house and settling in. It's been wonderful, actually.
Is that because you have a fairly European outlook, having lived in various parts of Europe, that it's not so much of a culture shock?
I guess so, really. I never really thought about that. But I mean, I suppose so. But I mean, I've never lived in Southern Europe before. I've always lived in Northern Europe. So that's different in some ways. There's slightly different things with the culture. But I think you're right, yes. I think having lived in different European countries, it's not so strange.
Yeah. And how's the language doing?
Oh, not so good. We went on an intensive week Spanish course before Christmas, the three of us. And we did very well in the classroom, of course. But yeah, taking it out and using it is a different thing. All I would say is we need a lot more practice and a lot more lessons.
Yes, I know that feeling. Time for your third piece of music, Debbie. What did you choose for your third piece?
I chose David Bowie, Life on Mars. David Bowie was a hero of mine when I was a teenager in the 70s. It was really hard to pick one piece of music from that period because so many pieces of music meant so much, you know, when you're an angst-ridden teenager. But I think this song probably encapsulates those feelings the best. And it just reminds me of punk and going out and cider and all sorts of things. It reminds me of being happy as well, you know.
Is there life on Mars? America's tortured brow, that Mickey Mouse has grown up a cow. Now the workers have struck for fame, 'cause Lennon's on sale again. See the mice in their million hordes, from Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads. Rule Britannia is out of bounds, to my mother, my dog and clowns. But the film is a sad thing for, 'cause I wrote it 10 times or more. It's about to be writ again, as I ask you to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. Oh man, look at those cavemen go. It's a freaky show. Take a look at the old man beating up the wrong guy. Oh man, wonder if he'll ever know who's in the best-selling show. Is there life on we
My guest this week sharing her life story is Debbie Williams, founder of the pro-EU campaigning group Brexpats Hear Our Voice. Debbie and her family live in Alcosebre in Valencia province. Debbie, you mentioned before David Bowie that that particular song reminds you of happy times, but your angst-ridden teen years. Where were you born and brought up?
I was born in Llanelli, South Wales, and I left at 18 to join the Air Force, but that's where I spent my childhood.
And were you angst-ridden growing up?
Oh, I was moody. I'd say from the ages of 13 to about 16, yes. I think, I probably was.
Were you part of a large family, small family? What was your childhood like?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was just full of laughs, full of fun. I don't know. We didn't have all the technology. We used to make our own fun. And my family is quite small. It's just me and my sister, but, you know, the extended family. And lots of friends. Yeah, and lots of singing, of course, being Welsh.
Yeah. And has that remained with you, this desire and ability to sing?
Well, I always like to think I can sing, but I did have a karaoke machine for Christmas, and I've now found out actually that I can't sing.
So you left school at 18, and you joined the Women's Royal Air Force. Was there a particular reason? Was that always something you wanted to do?
I don't know. I was obsessed with aviation as a child. I don't know whether it was because I used to read these books called Air Hostess Annie, or I wanted to be an air hostess, first of all. But that soon changed when I was about 13 to join the RAF. My grandfather had been in the RAF. My uncle was serving in the RAF at the time. I knew I didn't want to go to university. So I thought, well, what can I do? And I fancied the RAF.
And you were an air traffic controller. And I noticed that you said that you hoped to travel the world, but instead you were posted to, basically RAF bases in and around Middlesex. Did you get to travel much?
I did. And in fact, I'll just correct you slightly. I wasn't an air traffic controller. There's a slight difference. I was an assistant traffic controller. There is a difference.
Right.
And I was posted to RAF Middlesex. There was a bit of an error. I was supposed to be posted overseas, but I turned it down. And because I turned it down, you've got to reapply to go on the overseas list. So I actually never went overseas as a posting. I stayed in RAF Middlesex, as I called it. And it was great. It was great fun. But I did get to travel, actually. I was very, very lucky. I did get to travel with the squadrons, on training trips and things like that.
Yeah. And was it during your time in Middlesex or in Surrey where you met your husband?
Oh, we knew each other from school.
Ah, okay.
Yes, we've got a long history going back to when we were 12.
Marvellous. And when you, so your husband, has your husband always been involved in IT, or is that something he moved into over the course of his career?
Oh, over the course of his career. He joined the army, actually, the same time as I joined the Air Force, he joined the army. And so we kept in touch. And when he left the army and we were married then, he decided to retrain, because he was doing instrument technician and with the REMI, and he couldn't really find anything to suit in the civilian world. So he retrained in IT.
And you mentioned that you're a limited company and your husband's autonomo over here in Spain. Do you mm-hmm. do you work together on that as well, or are you now so occupied with the campaigning groups that you haven't really got the time to support him?
Well, yeah, no, that's a key issue, that is. Yes, I used to help him with the limited company. I used to do because it's dormant now because we're autonomo here. Mm. I did the accounts and things like that, and the filing, the secretarial work. But since 2016, I've had less and less time for that. So he's been doing it mostly on his own.
Oh, he's been abandoned.
He's been abandoned. And he's learned to cook very well.
brilliant. Debbie, what's your fourth piece of music and why have you chosen this as your next piece?
Okay, the fourth piece is Prince, The Most Beautiful Girl in the World. And a bit cheesy, but it was the song that was playing when I was pregnant with my daughter. It was number one when she was born. So it's there in the background, whenever I think of that period of time, I always hear this song.
Talk Radio Europe. Online at tre.radio. Life Stories with Ian Rutter.
Debbie Williams is my guest sharing her life story. Debbie founded the pro-EU campaigning group Brexpats Hear Our Voice, and Debbie's chatting via Skype from her home in Alcosebre in the province of Valencia. So, Debbie, you and your husband were both service people, and you then became involved in, or your husband particularly got involved in IT contracting following his departure from the army. It was 1999 that you started to travel around Europe for work. What was it like, and were you happy to give up your RAF career at that stage? What was the epiphany? When did you decide to go it alone?
It was in 1999, early 1999. I was working for NATS, National Air Traffic Services, at this time, and my daughter was small, and I was working part time, but I wanted to be at home with her full time. And my husband got this opportunity for this contract in Munich. And we deliberated about it and then decided, yes, let's go for it. So I was able to give up work and be at home and be a full-time mum. And we moved, we up sticks and we moved. And it was risky because it was only a year's renewable contract. So to move everything on that basis. So it was a lot of stress, but we decided to give it a go. And it was incredibly hard for me personally the very first year. Very, very hard. I couldn't speak a word of German. I didn't know anybody. And I had given up my job to go there, which I you all think is going to be wonderful, but actually having worked for 20 odd years and then to suddenly be home full time. So there were lots of things to learn and lots of things to do. But after that first year, I never looked back.
Did you have a support network? I mean, obviously, when you're in the forces and you're posted abroad, you do tend to have a very strong support network.
You do.
So suddenly doing this with as a mother to a young daughter, going off and living in Germany without knowing the language, was there a support network or was it very difficult to become integrated?
No, it was very difficult for me. Well, first, I'd say very difficult for the first 6 months until my daughter went to school and I started pulling myself together and putting myself out there and meeting people. And yeah, but there's no support network. You do it on your own. You know, there was no company it wasn't a company move. You know, we had to do it all ourselves. Yeah. It was really worth it. But that first year I struggled, I have to be honest.
Yeah. And did you keep a base in the UK so that if things didn't work out, you could always move back?
Yes, we did. Yeah, we did.
And presumably that was also important from your husband's point of view to go back to find the next contract, to be able to build up those sort of contacts so that you always had had an option when one contract came to an end.
Yeah. He's very good at that. I think in all these years that he's been contracting now, I think he's only had two periods of, you know, a month or so where he's not had a contract. He's really good at that.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned earlier in our chat that I think you yourself described as being officially semi-retired. Is retirement something you want to do, are looking forward, or do you think you will always keep working in some capacity?
Well, I'd always thought I'd really look forward to being fully retired. Now that I've got a taste of this campaigning work and my social conscience has been reawakened, if you like, because it's not just Brexit, there's other aspects surrounding it that I'm interested in. I don't know. I mean, I probably would like to have a little bit of my life back.
Yeah.
And carry on without all the worry and the concern that's in the back of your mind. But I'd like to keep, you know, I wouldn't mind volunteering, doing something.
Yeah.
Well, you know, which I've never done before this.
And when you moved to Spain, you decided that, obviously you visited Spain on holiday, you decided that this might be the place that you would quite like to come and live. Did you have an overall plan in mind? Because obviously, you know, this was at a time when the post-referendum and you were already thrust into this campaigning group. Did you have a vision in mind as to how your semi-retirement and retirement might pan out here?
No, we just went for it. No visions, no plans. Let's just buy a house in Spain and let's just go.
Yeah.
We're lucky enough to be able to do that. I mean, I know not everybody can, but you know, we were lucky enough to be able to do that. But we knew it was the right place for us.
Yeah. And is your husband still working?
Yes, he is. He travels all over the place. That's why freedom of movement is so important. And I'd like to just put one point in here as well. And, you know, Mrs. May is always on about ending freedom of movement, and that's a bad thing. I mean, you know, if I don't know if your listeners know that it's not an immigration system. It's a reciprocal thing. And, you know, it's a two-way thing. And it opens up a huge job market, a huge job market for UK citizens. I mean, that's how we're able to do this.
Yes. Now, that brings me to another question. If you're going back to our earlier chat, when you did your initial straw poll before the referendum, mm-hmm. did the people who responded to you from the Leave side of the argument, what was the basis of their argument at that time? The fundamental basis?
Immigration.
And did they fully understand the difference between immigration and freedom of movement?
No. Not at all. They couldn't differentiate. They didn't understand, or they wouldn't listen to me that it was their right as well. And to be honest, some of the comments that I got personally, and I don't think a lot of people realise that I'm actually an immigrant. Well, their friend, I'm a migrant, for want of a better word. I wasn't able to get that through at the time.
Yeah, but I suppose the argument is that freedom of movement would not mean that much to many people if they haven't enjoyed the ability to be able to go and travel and work within the rest of Europe unencumbered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's still a right that they're entitled to. And even if they don't, their family might, their children might, their grandchildren might. You know, it's a wonderful thing. It's not a negative.
Yeah. Time for your fifth piece of music, Debbie. What have you chosen for your fifth piece, and why this particular piece?
Oh, Likey Lee, I Follow Rivers. This really is my Europop song. It reminds me of such a happy period of my life. We were living in Starnberg. My daughter was in university in Switzerland, so we used to travel regularly for nearly 3 years to see her. And crossing borders. And it also reminds me of long car journeys back to see the family in Wales, you know, driving from Munich, you know, 15 hours in the car. And this song was played. It was very popular at the time, and it was played over and over and over for what seemed like years. So that's why.
Thank you.
Debbie Williams is my guest sharing her life story. Debbie is the founder of the campaigning organisation Brexpats Hear Our Voice. Debbie and her family live in Alcosebre in Valencia province on the Costa del Azahar. Right, the big question, I suppose, Debbie, what do you think the outcome will be in March?
I really don't know, but I really hope that we can stay in the European Union and become even more integrated, full members of the European Union.
Do you think that is likely?
Absolutely, I have no idea. I am still hopeful. There's still a way to go yet.
Now, if the UK does ultimately leave the European Union, how do you think it will affect your plans for the future?
It depends in what capacity we leave the European Union. I mean, it's still unclear. Certainly no deal is going to be a complete nightmare for those of us living in the European Union from the UK.
Now, obviously, your husband does still work across the European Union. Is he worried about that? The ease with which he'll be able to do that, or is this something of great concern to you?
It's of great concern because there's no clarity. You know, we hear a lot about, you know, we will be third country nationals. Third country national legislation is we don't get the same rights as we have now. There are, of course, you get some rights under that. But there are still things that need to be bilaterally agreed or unilaterally agreed. So we've been calling for ring fencing of the current deal, the withdrawal agreement. But yes, we're going to be in no man's land. And that's not Project Fear. This is reality for everybody to know. It's reality. Third country national legislation will be at the discretion, under the discretion of the Spanish Immigration Service and how they decide to implement the rules of third country nationals. So it's not clear. That's why I think it would be better if we remain in the European Union.
Okay, so given that we have such a short period of time left, theoretically, what else is there that Brexpats Hear Our Voice as an organisation and British in Spain, British in Europe, what else can they do with any conviction? Do they still have that power to be able to change hearts and minds?
Yes, well, our group, Brexpats Hear Our Voice, we were invited to collaborate with a group called In Limbo, Our Brexit Testimonies, on a follow-up sister book to the In Limbo book. And it's testimonies from UK citizens living in the EU, some EEA citizens, some from the rest of the world, and some UK living in the UK. Testimonies are collected in this book, and they tell the stories of the concerns and worries of human beings, you know, caught up in all this. And I really recommend that everybody reads it, because all the questions that need answering that still haven't been answered are in that book, are in those books, actually, in both of them.
Now, obviously, another, I suppose, a pointed question is, in the title of your organisation is Brexpats Hear Our Voice. Is anybody with the power to change the current trajectory, is anybody listening?
I think there are people listening. We are in communication with quite a lot of people with a British in Europe hat on and with a Brexpats hat on. You know, we are, and there are people there, but it's just a case of Mrs. May listening to everybody else. Now, I know that she's working with some other parties now, doing some cross-party collaboration. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with that. But at the moment, Parliament and the government is in a mess.
Do you feel frustrated?
Oh, incredibly frustrated. Incredibly frustrated. And I'm thankful to groups like British in Europe and our group and the Remain in Spain and all the other groups, Eurocitizens, ECRU, all the other groups. There's so many today who do such a sterling job and work so hard, and they're all volunteers. It makes me feel quite emotional, actually, that the dedication of some people, you know, are giving their own time, and there are wonderful people out there.
Debbie, How can people find out more about Brexpats, Hear Our Voice, and more importantly, offer their support if they so wish? How can they find out more?
They can find us by Googling our website. We have a website. We're on Facebook, we've got a page and a closed Facebook group. If you don't do Facebook, please follow our website. We've also got a Twitter account, and also the same for British in Europe as well. They've got some really key documents on there that might be helpful to your listeners. So BritishInEurope.org.
Yeah. Now, obviously, regardless of where people sit on the remain or leave spectrum, I mean, it is a very frustrating time. It's a very uncertain time. If you were to give a couple of key pieces of advice, what would those pieces of advice be?
My main one is get yourself registered if you're not, and then check that you have exercised your treaty rights. Write to anybody and everybody you can think of. Join support groups like British in Europe, like ours, and just keep involved and look for information, not just reading the headlines of the news. Do your own research.
Debbie, it's time for your final piece of music. What have you chosen for your final piece?
I've chosen The Pogues, Dirty Old Town. It's my husband's favourite, well, both of ours. It's our song, which is an odd song to have as our song, but we love it. And it's a very atmospheric song, and it makes us laugh. It's not our town, isn't a dirty old town, Llanelli, but there's something atmospheric about it that reminds us of home.
Perfect. Debbie Williams, thank you so much for being my guest and for sharing your life story.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me. It's been a wonderful experience. Thank you, Ian.
Met my love by the gasworks wall. Dreamed a dream by the old canal. I kissed my girl by the factory wall. Dirty old town, dirty old town. Clouds are drifting across the moon. Cats are prowling on their beat. Springs a girl from the streets at night. Dirty old town, dirty old town. The smoky wind. Dirty old town, dirty old town. I'm gonna make me a picture box, shining steel, tempered in the fire. I'll chop you down like an old Dutch train. Dirty old town, dirty old town. I met my love
by the Gasworks wall. Dreamed a dream by the old canal. I kissed my girl by the factory wall. Dirty old town, dirty old town, dirty old town, dirty old town.
Talk Radio Europe.
If you would like to be a guest on Life Stories and chat to me about your life here in Spain, then I would be delighted to hear from you. Simply get in touch via the website www.tre.radio or through our Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official.